folks. You are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show here on the land of Israel.com, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are right now. We're in beautiful Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov in the heart of Jerusalem, the Nachlaot neighborhood. And what you just heard right now was the siren of Yom HaZikaron, the siren of Israeli Memorial Day. And Memorial Day is not a day of sales in this country, and I don't think it should be anywhere that. But here in Eretz Israel, in the land of Israel, in the state of Israel, Memorial Day is exactly that. It's a day of remembering the people who have fallen. And throughout the day today, wherever I've been, spoken with people, I've asked them, who's your one person that you remember? Who's the one person that you remember? And people just, you know, this morning I spoke to the driver of my daughter's school, and he just had a faraway glance, and he just said to me, my first Miluim was the Yom Kippur War in what was called the Chava Sinit, the Chinese farm, which was an area in Sinai, and a lot of people fell down there. And he just looked away, and you know, and a lot of people remember individual people. And one of the masterstrokes of social engineering of the founders of the state of Israel, the modern state of Israel, was the linkage between Yom HaZikaron, Israeli Memorial Day, and Israel Independence Day. In Rabbi Gorin's book, The First Chief Rabbi of the Army, he attributes it to himself, together with Ben-Gurion, who came up with this idea. And it's a pleasure it's an honor to be here in Jerusalem and to hear that siren that you just heard. And I'm not alone. I'm here with Rabbi Mike Foyer on Spiritual Cafe. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Yishai. It's good to be here.
So today is that day. You know, people that are going to be listening to the show might very well be listening already on Yom HaTzma'ut, and that shift between those two emotions, again, a masterstroke of social engineering, just such a brilliant way to actually make Memorial Day important and then Independence Day so much more meaningful when you realize the sacrifice that has been made in order to get there.
I feel like for me, especially because I never served in the IDF and therefore have been spared that loss of friends and loss of family that so much characterizes the Israeli experience. For me, the joy of Independence Day is a reflection of the struggle of my family and the Jewish people and the sacrifice to simply allow me to sit here in the sun and to enjoy a full and rich life. And I feel like that switch from Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaTzmaut, from Memorial Day to Independence Day, in many ways encapsulates that redemptive power of what it is to be back in our land.
And do you agree with me that there was just it was a masterstroke of thinking to unify those two things? I sometimes feel bad in America and other places where Memorial Day doesn't have that. Imagine if Memorial Day was July 3rd.
Right.
I think that would have made a lot more sense.
Perhaps, and I think that one of the reasons that Memorial Day in some communities in America, mind you, there are plenty of communities in America, particularly in the last decade, where it has become serious once again. But in many communities in America, it's not. And I think that's because America is dealing with a professional army. Since you know the 70s, going to the army has been a choice and is essentially a mercenary army. Whereas here, as a citizen army, are both our fight to survive and our glorying in what it is to be alive is very personal. It's very personal.
It's personal, and it's close. You know, one of the challenges of being in something like the American Army is that you're an army that fights battles that you don't exactly understand, with a people that you don't understand, and in back of you is not what we have here, which is kilometers to back in back of the front. Are your parents or your children? So it's much more personal, as you're saying.
Yeah.
Any case, so Independence Day. 5776. I started off my day yesterday by being called in for a small memorial commemoration yesterday morning, the day before Yom HaZikaron, at the tombs on the Mount of Olives of Meir Barazani and Feinstein and Barazani. Mm. These are two young men. One was 18, one was 19, who were caught by the British for terrorizing the British in order to gain independence from them, in order to get them to leave. And they were sentenced to a hanging. And they told their British captors, "We will not hang. We will find a way to kill ourselves, because we will not give you the pleasure. And you should know that hanging is not a way that we're going to go down." And anyway, they were able to sneak in a grenade, and they embraced each other, and they sang Hatikva very loudly, and then they blew each other up. One thing I didn't know is that right next to their tomb. Is another tomb of a man named Mizrahi. The next morning, the British were so angry that they came out shooting in the streets. Yes, and they injured 13 people. And this man, Mizrahi, who was a father of 10, he was 39 years old, was shot. And he was hit, and he went to somebody's house to try to get bandaged, and they pulled him out, and he died on the street.
Wow.
And you could see the next day he dies. And just this like shocking, you know, extra. I've been living on the Mount of Olives for 5 years now. I've been to those tombs many times, and the incredible self-sacrifice of the Jewish people, and I wanted to compare that to the fact that this week's Torah portion and more is also full of the Jewish holidays. There's these two sets of Jewish holidays. One is the Torah holidays, mm-hmm. and one of these holidays. That are the modern Israeli holidays. Now, for some people, maybe some people in the ultra-Orthodox camp and other camps as well, the Torah holidays, they're the real ones. But the modern Israel holidays, they're a construct of man, kind of modern, come and go, not really that moving, not really that me. I don't identify necessarily with these holidays because they're kind of, you know, the flag and country and all that, how should I say, like, stuff of regular civilization.
Of ephemeral life. You know, I mean, if I may, I think a big picture is important to paint for people here, because what I hear you asking is you can state it as a subset of our society that rejects these holidays, or a subset that accepts them. But really there's a question in there, is will we succeed in making them fully real?
Or should we succeed?
So just to paint a full picture, right, the primary day of sanctity in the Torah is
Yom Kippur.
Shabbat.
Okay.
Gotcha. Right? Why? Because Shabbat is part of the construct of creation.
Right.
Right. If God forbid there were no Jews in the world, there would still be Shabbat.
But by the way, just let me just for tiny parentheses tell you that another driver that I spoke to yesterday said to me, Yom HaZikaron, Israel Memorial Day, that's the holiest day on the calendar for me. Hmm. That's what he said. And the way he said it was just he wasn't dissing Yom Kippur or Shabbat.
No, for sure not.
He was like, this is the holiest day because this is where people were martyred. This is where people became holy for us.
It's very powerful, and I want to come to that. So let's hold that
sure.
at the end. So
and parentheses.
There's Shabbat, which is part of the construct of creation. Then you have what are known as the Moadim, right? The appointed times. These are the festival holidays, and also you mentioned Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. These are the holidays that God commands in the Torah, but they are an embodiment usually of historical events. Standing at Sinai, leaving of Egypt, you know, the wandering in the wilderness. So God commands, but actually it lies on the Jewish people to uphold them, right? Classically, it was the Beit Din, the high court in Jerusalem, that fixed the day of the calendar that told us when the festivals fell out. So that's the next step. The third step, because you left the piece out, are Purim and Hanukkah, and also Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av. Because these are the days in which the Jewish people, through its leadership, understood its historic experience, right? The salvation from the Greeks, the defeat of the Persians, you know, the memory of the destruction. And we decided to fix that as a point in time forever. And there are various ways in which we know that there was divine approval. So you see how the agency moves from the purely divine to the partnership to really into the hands of Am Yisrael.
And Hanukkah and Purim and Tisha B'Av became central days in the Jewish calendar. Tisha B'Av mirroring the Yom Kippur in its kind of heaviness.
Absolutely.
And Hanukkah in its celebration joy. Of nationalism, yeah. And Purim with its, you know, victory and joy.
And the key is, particularly in Hanukkah and Purim, it's very apparent, was what the sages succeeded in doing is taking a particular historic experience, and deriving from it its essential message, right? Hanukkah is the battle of light over darkness. Purim is the struggle of the hidden and the revealed. And there's many other things. I don't want to reduce them, but you see how they took a historic experience, and they didn't abstract it and get rid of the historic experience, God forbid. What they realize is that for the Jewish people, in our ability to elevate consciousness, individual historic experience can have existential significance. And so this is the question which we receive when it comes to days like Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaTzmaut. Will we as a people be able to take our particular historic experience in all of its importance and all of its holiness, right? Can I take that cab driver's statement that this is the holiest day of the year, which he absolutely means, and I agree with you, and I empathize with it, but it's a reflection not of some abstraction or some theology. It's an expression of his experience, therefore, as real as it gets. And can we somehow encapsulate that into something which that 1,000 years from now, 1,500, 2,000 years from now, that our descendants will be able to derive meaning for their lives from it? Because I would love it if our descendants 2,000 years from now never knew what it was to lose brothers, fathers, children, friends in war, right? But nevertheless, I think it would be a terrible thing if they didn't understand what it is to give over oneself an all-consuming sacrifice.
And those days are mirrored. There are ways in which people have found, as you're talking about, a kind of tie-in to greater forces that prove, shall we say, that these days have a kind of godly signature on them. People talk about the Gra and the special days that he said that are within the sphera count, and he pointed out to certain days which line up with Yom HaTzmaut. And the 28th of Iyar, which is Yom Yerushalayim, is also the passing day of Shmuel HaNavi. And as I always tell people, there's only one term I really, maybe one or two terms that I borrow from Christianity. One of them is patron saint. And I always say that Samuel, Shmuel the prophet, is a kind of patron saint of Jerusalem. He's always looking out on Jerusalem. You could see him from the mountain of Ramot over there, kind of looking out over Jerusalem. And it was on his day of passing, that's commemorated and known that his tomb and the rest of Jerusalem was liberated.
Appropriately so, because the role that Shmuel, that Samuel plays, is he is the midwife of Malchut. He is the one that births kingship into Am Yisrael. And, you know, let it be soon, let it be now. Kingship in Am Yisrael and the world will certainly flow from Jerusalem again.
That's an amazing thing. But we're talking about tying in those days. Yom HaZikaron, I don't know if it's got that kind of tie-in.
I think it's the most basic human tie-in there could be. To me, and like I said,
And Rav Goren was a rabbi of tremendous stature.
Tremendous stature.
And tremendous understanding of both state and Torah coming together.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you ever wonder, do you think sometimes the founders, are they like the first redactors of things and then we get better with time? Sometimes it seems like the first to do it, if it's the Baal Shem Tov or Avraham Avinu, sometimes the first is like the penultimate. And you wonder how the first one reached such a conclusion that the later ones are having a hard time reaching.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, you can look at many things. It's a question of whether things mature with age or degrade. But I think that the essential message of Yom HaZikaron, which, as I said, I relate to this day, but I have been spared a truly personal attachment to it. But I think it is the notion that while life is the most precious thing we have, there are things toward which it's worth giving it, right? Which is a very important difference that we have with much of the Western world. And we value life. V'chart v'chaim, choose life. That is our entire stance in the world. At the same time, we understand that life's value is not found purely in living. And I feel like in many ways, that's the critical message here. And that's why, though it is a sad day, I feel like there's a deep joy which underlies it, because it is a militant assertion of the real value of life. And there's a passionate joy of a society that is not only capable, but willing to embody that in the world.
Rabbi Mike Foyer, regarding that very thing, later on in today's show, on the podcast, you'll hear some of the audio that I recorded yesterday at the Lone Soldier Center Memorial Ceremony at Givat HaTachmoshet in English. It was very beautiful. And you'll hear there Ari Cocker, and he was talking about, I said to him, you know, when you say the word fallen, is it really fallen? It really means killed, killed in battle, lost forever. He's like, no, I don't accept that. Fallen means I've fallen and I get back up again. And as I drove to you to Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov, sulamyaakov.com, today, I was driving through a place that I drive every day, which is the Mount of Olives. And there was thousands of Jewish children on the mountain, wow, walking around and being led around and taught about the various self-sacrifice that happened, the people that are laying there, and the mountain came to life. You know what I mean? That's wow. That's Tchiyat HaMetim on the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives is supposed to be the place where there's going to be the resurrection of the dead. You know, the resurrection of the dead may it really be exactly that, but there's a different kind of resurrection of the dead when you see the children of Israel walking on the mountains and recognizing the people that came before
and drawing the strength to live.
Amen. Let's take a little break here. I do want to thank a few people. Last week I announced a contest about getting the flags of Israel. Interestingly, I've collected all the different flags. I have three big flags. One is a giant, 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 giant flag, which flies on the very, very top and apex of the Mount of Olives from the Choshen building. So I have that one. Okay, I have that one. It's torn.
It's a very big flag.
Right, it's a huge flag, and it's got tears from the wind. It's flown over Jerusalem for real. Then I have a second flag that flew on the very top of my building, which is also a very big flag. And then I have a third flag, which is a tad smaller, yet still pretty big, you would consider pretty big, that has flown over my mirpeset, my balcony. Also, all three on the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, in the wind of Jerusalem, the spirit of Jerusalem. So I have them all put aside. So the first was claimed by our patron, Jack, who dedicates the show to his wife Lillian and his sister Sarah. And he just reached out immediately and said, you know, what can I do to win this flag? And he got it. He won that, the big flag. He says he's going to drape it in his bedroom until his wife makes Aliyah. I say, great. So that's number one. I had another few bites and nibbles, but nobody got on the hook yet. You gotta be a donor to the show. You gotta help make it happen. To get this flag, it's like a... You got to earn it. It's you know, good feelings are important, but you got to put something in it. It's something that it costs money. It's going to cost money to ship it, and it's worth something, and it's got to be worth something to you. If you have to give money because it'll even hurt you a little bit, that's okay, because this thing is not a small thing. And I, you know, if you really do, you know where I got this idea from, Rabbi Mike?
Where's that?
All right. My wife used to work as an intern at Congress. Mm-hmm. So she told me that sometimes they would buy new flags and they had a model. You won't believe this. They had a model of the Capitol. Uh-huh. And they would wave the flag over the model and then send it to their constituents saying, this flag flew over the Capitol. So I was like, that's awesome.
Okay, that's perfect.
Except the difference is, I was like, at least, but I won't fake it. This is going to be a totally real thing. So I realized that people want these flags. So that's number one order of business. Number two order of business is I want to do a shout out to my friend Jeanette Michel, out in Switzerland, who helps us so much and is a great part of the show. And also Fred Pizov, who is out there helping us out. I also do want to make a shout out to Uri Karzen, who is the Director General of the Jewish Community of Hebron. Hebron, that's the resting place of the fathers and mothers. He lets me do this show. You know, I work for Hebron, very, very busy, but he understands the importance of bringing out this kind of content to the world, this kind of Torah. That's what the Hebron people are all about. And Uri is also a listener, so he gives me a lot of comments about the show as well. So, Uri Karzen, keep up the good work. You and your great family, who are really involved in renewing the possibility and connection of the Jewish people to their ancient homeland, especially in Hebron, especially to the fathers and mothers. So, yashar koach. Today is Israel Memorial Day. You are listening to the Land of Israel Network. This is the Yishai Fleischer Show. We're on Spiritual Cafe with Rabbi Mike Foyer here in Sulam Yaakov, Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov. So what I still wanted to understand from you is there's these two like systems, and do you think that this the as they call it now, they call it, you know, there's the Chagim of the Torah, and then there's Chagei Israel, mm-hmm. these holidays of Israel. Do you think that they will be incorporated into the body of Jewish consciousness?
I would like to believe so, and I believe that that's the struggle that's happening in our generation. It's a question, does Independence Day become a day off where we all love to barbecue, which I am fully in favor of that being part of what we do, but or are we able to also reach within it and think and really grasp the significance of our historical experience? And part of what I think that we're lacking is, or I don't know if it's what we're lacking, I think what's holding us back is, as we've spoken about before, the enormity of the situation that we're in. Absolutely. Right now. I, Dovka, these times, I'm constantly thinking about, what if I could go back? You know, I teach history, so I like to pick a time, right? If I could go back to 17th century Poland and grab a Jew on the street and said, listen, there's this office there in the center of the city. You go there, you tell them you're Jewish, they'll put you in a metal tube, fly you through the air to Jerusalem, and there they'll give you food and clothing until you can find a job. He would look at me and say, when did the Messiah come? And nobody told me.
Right.
We're literally living in such times. Mm-hmm. And yet it's a struggle, because the reality is that life on some level doesn't change. We got kids, you got a job, we're in a difficult political and cultural situation, et cetera, et cetera. And yet it's so important to just step back and see the sunshine and realize the miracle that we're living.
Absolutely. It is a miracle, and it is a grand time. It is the greatest project of the Jewish people in 2,000 years. And I just want to tell you that yesterday I went to something that I think was a first, certainly a first for us and not a very common occurrence, which is an English language memorial ceremony in one of the most central of Israeli sites dealing with Memorial Day, which is Givat HaTachmoshet, Ammunition Hill. You'll hear about it on the next part of the show. My wife said to me, "Wow, we are part of a very special class of people. We're North American or Western country Jews. We're speaking English, and we've all chosen to come here. The people that we talked about dying yesterday, they died. They didn't have to be here. They chose to be here. Many of them." Two cases yesterday where people who were in the army were on leave in America, flew back, and then ended up dying in different wars, including Mikey Levine. So, you know, like, we realize that to be a Jew who's chosen this land, it's a very, very special and very powerful thing. And in some ways, we're always going to be a tad outsiders. In some ways. And in some ways, what I felt yesterday is like we're on the inside of the inside. Like we really believe in this stuff. And when you meet American Jews that are here, you talk to them, oftentimes you're like, whoa, that guy's pretty Zionistic. Oftentimes. That's a regular occurrence, because these people are the people that are here. They've chosen it. They want it. They really, really believe in it all the way.
It's the power of chosen consciousness. And I would take it one step beyond Zionism and use a word, I don't know if you use it anymore, but you introduced to me this idea of Moriahism, right? That Zionism as the rebuilding of the body is something which someone who was born here and is a product of this society almost naturally contributes to. But the vision of reinfusing the soul into the Jewish people, into the world, I think that can only come from chosen consciousness. And I really do believe that those of us who chose to come here and who, you know, God forbid, have the option to leave. And so therefore, every day becomes a renewed commitment to both to the reality and to the dream, right? We offer something very important, not only to this country, but to the world. Because I tell you a crazy story, right?
Love stories.
I know someone who, for the last few years, has spent the Israel Memorial, the Memorial Day today, going to, there are a few joint memorials for Israeli soldiers and Palestinians. I don't know if you know this phenomenon that's begun in the last couple of years. So I asked him why, and I have to admit, I had a little bit of edge, because though I actually have probably more empathy than the average right-wing religious Jew for the struggle of the Palestinian people to have a decent life, I somehow feel that this is perhaps not the best day in which to indulge it. And is his answer,
and the attempt there, it may be couched in very pretty language. Oftentimes, what behind that event is actually to erode. Let's put it this way. I perceive it as an erosion of the Jewish narrative and mixing the pains and therefore not identifying who the aggressor is and who the defender is, who's got rights, who doesn't have rights. And that's exactly what it does. It masks those things.
He really felt his experience was not. And one of the things he said to me is that his vision of redemption is that the people who mourn in those moments should understand that the struggle of the Jewish people for sovereignty, and there's just no way you can slice it, that in the world until it's fully redeemed, the struggle for sovereignty is bound up with the assertion physically up to the point of violence that I will not move. I will not move and I will not be moved. That his vision is that all the people there, all of whom who are a victim of our struggle for sovereignty, right? The Jews who die fighting and you know, Palestinians that die fighting, they're all dying for the sake of our sovereignty. They should all realize that it was for the good. There's a redemptive vision that is going to emerge.
Okay.
And I find that an incredible, like, agree, don't agree. That's a consciousness that you could bring to this conflict and the vision of what it is to be the Jewish people that is truly unique. And I feel like that potential to grasp a wholeness and not have it undermined. And that's key. I agree with you that so often what this is a wavering and a guilt and a fear of the enormity of the responsibility if we actually own what it is to be ourselves. But there's also an element where lo yisa goyel goy cherev, lo yomadu od milchama, that really we have a nation here in order that in the long run that the world should not have to know war anymore.
You know, Rabbi Mike, with regarding to not knowing war, I'm often, just yesterday I spoke with Habonim Dror, which is a socialist, left-leaning kibbutz movement, Jewish movement, okay? And so they said to me, they ask these things in different ways. They say, well, what about Jewish values? And what they understand is that what you just said now, which is the verse in Isaiah, that a nation shall not take sword to another nation, we will not learn war anymore, that's a Jewish value. What I say to them is, it is a Jewish value, peace is a Jewish value, but first thing is, we cannot serve that value. We have to serve a higher value that is a value, but if that becomes the ultimate value, then we can become very easily suckers and weak, and it's like we can reach that, but we can reach it, as they say in American politics, peace through strength, meaning to say, yes, I am for peace, but it's not going to come through me being so obsessive about the word peace that it means that I become what's the word when you don't want to take up arms?
Pacifist.
Pacifist. Meaning to say, I'm for peace, but I'm not a pacifist.
I mean, on the contrary, you know who the great vision of like the failed messianic vision is in the Tanakh? You know, Yoshiyahu. You remember King Yoshiyahu, one of the last righteous king of Yehuda, right? How did he die? Do you recall?
Tell us.
So he led a revival in the kingdom of Yehuda, drove out all of the strange
gods.
This
is Josiah.
Josiah, right? Drove out. He was during the time of the prophet Jeremiah. Wrote, got rid of all the worship of strange gods, broke down all their altars, really purified the people.
And I know him specifically well because I lived in the town of Beit El. Josiah came to the town of Beit El. There was an alternative temple there.
Yep.
There was an alternative narrative going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And he destroyed all that and burned the bones of the
priests on the altar.
It's awesome. Like it was a total cleansing day.
Very intense. And at a certain point late in his life, you know, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, went to go to war with the empire of Assyria. And anybody who knows the geopolitics of the Middle East knows that nothing has ever changed. Right now, we're on the line between East and West. Once upon a time, we were on the line between Rome and Parthia, right? And then we were on the line between Egypt and Assyria. If you wanted to go to battle, you march up the coast of Israel, and then you take a right, and you head out, right? So he marches out from Jerusalem with his army to stop Pharaoh. Why? Like, Pharaoh says to him, like, what business do you have with me? I'm going this way. I don't have any problem with you. He says, no, because the messianic vision is that lo yavor cherev ba'artzecha, right? That not only will we live in peace, but no sword will even pass through our land. He was so convinced that his commitment to God and his purity meant that he was really going to redeem the whole world, and he died there. Because so there's an important message in what you're saying is that first and foremost, our job is to make sure that we are who we need to be and doing what we need to do.
Right. Basics. Like just the basics, you know, just keep it simple.
And the dream and the vision that we should bring about a redemption, that war ceases in the world, is an important one. We should never let go of it. But we should also never fool ourselves to think that you can skip steps on the way. That's what seems to me.
Right. And skipping steps is part of it, but also not worshiping a value and then in your mind making it the supreme Jewish value.
I think we mean the same thing.
I find that some of these groups that I deal with, they have a sense of Jewish value, but they've put it on the pyramid incorrectly. They've lined it up incorrectly in terms of what Jewish values are. You know, Jewish values are peace. Well, you know, Jewish values are also war. The Torah says make an army. The Torah says fight the bad guys. There's a lot of, you know, fighting the bad guys. For example, I was always amazed that the book of Zechariah is really not a book of peace at all. It's much more like fight to the end. Hold on strong.
I mean, that's where the phrase the horses of the apocalypse come from.
Right, right. All right, let's get to one last thing with you, Rabbi Mike, here, and that is the very end of the Parsha. Strange story, two Jews are fighting. Two Jews are fighting. One Jew, or at least the son of an Israelite woman, curses. What does he do? He curses the name, or does he utilize the name, somehow pronounces the name, and it says, and he curses. Uh-oh. It's like, imagine like a WWF fight, and they're like smashing each other with like chairs and tables, and then one guy like says something, and everybody's like, you did not just say that. And everybody's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And they separate the fighting guys ostensibly, and they bring the one cursed to Moses, and Moses has to check, like, what happens when a person like...
No one has done this before.
Right. It reminds me a little bit of some of these movies. Anyway, like a child like says a curse and the parents are like, ah! Everybody's like, oh my God, what is going to do? And what happens is that basically the order comes down that the cursor has to be taken outside of the camp. Everybody who heard him, who's a witness, has to put their hands on their head and then later stone him to death. That is the decision that comes down to that. What is this story about? What does it have to do with Torah portion of Emor?
Well, I think the story has a deep parallel with a very small but significant mention in the story of creation. You know, when you look at the genealogy that follows on creation, there's a generation which is called Dol Enosh, right? The generation of Enoch. Right?
Enoch.
Yeah. Thank you. Right? And it says there,
you don't speak Bibleese?
No, I don't. It says there, Az huchal likro b'shem Hashem. Right? Then, in the simple reading is, then they began to call...
To call the name of God.
The name of God.
So beautiful.
So beautiful, and yet the rabbis identify it as the source of all idolatry. Which is a very strange thing. As it is a very strange thing, why should this be a life or death issue that he said the name of God? Even if you can curse the name of God. Right? But I think the answer is the same either way. What does it mean that by calling on the name of God that they began the root of idolatry? It's because as soon as you reduce God to a name, right? And it becomes something you cannot put in your pocket.
You own him.
Systematize. Right? Not only do you own him, but the name becomes a substitute for a live relationship. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's a difference between thinking, you know, God forbid, neither of us, of course, have ever cursed our fathers, but it's also something that the Torah forbids, right? But there's a big difference, between a kid who, when he's alone in his room or there with his friends, says mean things about his parents, than one who looks in his face and says, you are this and such, right? The second is a breaking of a relationship. The first one can be a lot of things, anger, teenagehood, etc. The second is essentially saying, you're no longer my parent. Right, and here the pronunciation of God's name, particularly in the context of cursing, is a way of basically saying, "There's no God. I'll show you. I have power over God. I'm going to use God's name like it's a tool I can pull out of my pocket for my own interests. And by doing that, I'm basically pushing God out of the picture."
And yet Moses uses God's name, according to the Midrash, to kill the Egyptian.
Which is because Moses' whole life is about embodying God's name in the world through action, right? Meaning what Moses does is push the story forward in order that God's name become known. What this person is doing is reducing God's name to a tool and thus basically eliminating the live unfolding relationship and saying, oh, well, God's name is a utility. You can use it for good, you can use it for bad, but this not. It's not like there's actually a being here that is asserting a will.
And with that, Rabbi Mike Foyer, with that idea of the name, of recognizing God's name in this world, we also recognize the names of people who fell today. And today is a day of names. It's a day of naming those people. And that's why I ask people, give me a name. My name is Tom Kareen. That's the name I remember. Tom Kareen was a commander of mine in the army, and he died, was killed and fell in a Hezbollah ambush in 1996. I knew him. I knew him relatively well. I knew him, but I remember the last time I saw him, because we actually weren't so friendly. And I was standing at a guard post, and from a distance I saw him walking, and he saw me from a distance, and I like waved to him, which was like not exactly the way our relationship was. And I remember to this day how broadly he waved back at me. Mm. That was the last time I saw him, and it was just, I remember thinking to myself, boy, I didn't know we were close friends, but the way his gesture was like, I'm your friend, and maybe I am his friend, and that I help memorialize him. Through talking about him and even writing about him. In any case, Rabbi Mike Foyer, Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov, Spiritual Cafe, thank you so much. Parshat Emor is in the book of Leviticus, chapter 24. More power to you. I hope to see you next week, Bezrat Hashem. And all of you, please write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. If you have questions for Rabbi Mike, you can direct them through me, or I could even send your initial email to him and connect you. And he's, of course, at his website, which is sulamyaakov.com. And stay tuned for the Lone Soldiers ceremony from Ammunition Hill, the memorial of fallen soldiers. Rabbi Mike, thank you very much, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
And Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting on the land of Israel.com. From Jerusalem to the world, and right now I'm in a very important place in Jerusalem. This is actually Givat HaTachmoshet. I'm looking at one of the giant flags of Jerusalem that from the Mount of Olives you could actually see it waving here. And we're in what was once a Jordanian fort. And this Jordanian fort was taken in the Six-Day War with a big losses to the paratroopers who fought through the ditches and the hard battle that was in this fortified fort. Today, it's a museum. It's a museum of education, of paratrooper heritage, of the story of capturing Jerusalem, and of really the Six-Day War. And there's even a song written about this spot and the battle that took place here. You say to any Israeli, Givat HaTachmoshet, they know exactly what you're talking about. Zevik Ben Shachar is the director of education, Israel education, at Jerusalem U. He's at this event today, and he's a good friend. He's going around the world teaching people about Israel and Israeli identity and our rights to this land. Zevik, what are you doing here at the program today? Oh, I forgot to say, today is about to, it's the sun is setting, and soon it's going to be Israeli Memorial Day. And we're going to be remembering the fallen, the heroes, the people who sacrificed for us to be able to stand here in freedom in our country and with this flag waving, this beautiful blue and white flag and this beautiful Jerusalem and this beautiful beginning of summer day. Zevik, tell me what you're doing here in the program.
Well, I'm actually here representing my a cappella group, Culture Shock, and we're going to be singing three songs about Israel, about Jewish identity. We're going to be part of this ceremony. I'm very moved by the occasion.
Okay, so sometimes here in Israel, there's like nouveau art and all kinds of ways to describe Israeli culture. I find it sometimes to be, it doesn't always jive with me exactly. Tell me what your songs are really about. How do you bring out through culture and through an alternative to like plain text or just reading in your songs that you're going to be singing? How are you going to be bringing out the story of Israel, and how are you going to make people, and this is one of the key challenges at events like this, to make people emotional about this day?
We perform a variety of songs, some English songs, some Israeli Hebrew songs. Today we're going to be performing three Israeli songs. One is the Hope, HaTikvah, the national anthem. We're going to be performing that. But we're also going to be singing a song called Arim Roshi, which means to hold your head up high and to be proud. And I think it represents this occasion. We are here in Jerusalem, liberated, united Jerusalem, singing for the Jewish world, for Israelis, Jews, Christians, Muslims alike here in the liberated Jerusalem, celebrating our freedom here. This is no small thing, and I never take it for granted.
Indeed, there's a lot of blood beneath our feet right now. The soil that we're walking on has been watered with Jewish blood. There's been some statements recently made by even the deputy chief of staff of the Israeli army, equating Israelis sometimes, and even the Israeli army, to the Nazis. There's been a big stir here in the country. Everybody's talking about it. I even spoke to two people today, important people, both said to me that it marred their Israel Memorial Day that the statements were made. And one of the big challenges that Israel has right now is disillusion of identity, a loss of knowing the justice of its cause. And if it's true in Israel, it's so much more true out in the United States and other places where the Israel narrative is easy kind of to dispel, where you could just falsify images and talk about certain things and kind of make people forget about the big story of the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel and the national liberation movement of the Jewish people. You deal a lot with that. You're out there in the trenches, not these trenches in Givat Tachmoshet, but those on American campus. How do you bring people into a consciousness of Jewish identity in this battle for identity?
The main message is that Israel is our land, unapologetically so. Israel is the homeland of the Jewish people, and we're proud of it. I try not to link Israel and its existence to the Holocaust or to any other persecution or sufferings that the Jewish people have gone through. I think we make a mistake when we make that link. This is our homeland because it's been our homeland for the last 3,000 years. We've had a continuous presence here. We came back in the 1880s to bring back Zionism alive and to establish a state, and we're here because it's ours, because we have the right to it, because of the justness of the cause, not because the Jewish people need a safe haven.
Okay, speaking of safe haven, one of the reasons that we do have a safe haven is because Jewish fighters put their life on the line and have given up their lives for the state of Israel. All of us here in Israel have somebody that we remember that either died in battle, in the army, or in terrorism, which we link up also on Yom HaZikaron, Memorial Day. One person that you remember today that kind of, when you think about it, that's like the day that you recall his or her memory?
This is someone that I wasn't acquainted with personally, but he was in my unit. I served with a unit called Sayeret Givati. It's an infantry unit. He was involved in an operation in Lebanon where five soldiers in our unit were killed. Now, he survived it, but he came out with shell shock. And he was never the same afterwards. And 3 years after that operation and after that battle, he took his life. And so I think when we commemorate this day, we think not only of the fallen soldiers, but also of the soldiers that are alive and carry the memory and carry the stories and carry the painful and tremendous impact that war has.
Indeed. And on their on the weight that they carry in the infantry and also in their hearts and in their souls, this country is built. And I always remember what my friend told me, that one day in Auschwitz, Auschwitz at full capacity killed more Jews than all of the wars of Israel combined. And it's an honor it's a sad and tragic honor to die for the rebuilding of a Jewish state. And if you would ask anybody in the Holocaust, would they switch, if they had to die, would they switch their lot with an Israeli soldier? They certainly would have. But they also died being Jewish, for proudly being Jewish. And now we are here commemorating this day. And I want to thank you very much, Zevik Ben-Shachar, and thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you very much, Ishai, and thank you for all the important work you're doing for the Jewish people.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Ishai Fleischer Show, and I'm here at Givat HaTachmoshet, Ammunition Hill in Jerusalem, and we're about to transition into Yom HaZikaron, 24 hours of memory of those who sacrificed for the Jewish people, for Israel, for us to be able to stand here in Jerusalem. And then we transition from that to Yom HaTzma'ut, Israel Independence Day. Really a brilliant masterstroke of Israeli ingenuity was to couple Memorial Day together with Independence Day, because it's like in America, Memorial Day is like sales and stuff. You don't remember. Here, it's like you think about the soldiers, you think about the sacrifice, and you transition from that into Independence Day. I think it was a masterstroke of social engineering there. We really, for a lot of people here in Israel, the holiest day on the calendar is Israel Memorial Day. That's what a bus driver told me today. He said the holiest day of the year is Israel Memorial Day. And I think there's a beautiful thought in there. I'm standing with two awesome gentlemen. One is Akiva Werber, who is the former project director of Aliyah for English-speaking countries for the municipality of Jerusalem. And also he was at the Jewish Agency for years and years. And yet, Akiva, you look better than ever before. You have become healthier than ever before. You've lost a lot of weight, and you're also volunteering with a lot of stuff. We're going to get to you in just a second. And also Jeff Dalby, who's the director of the Israel Office of the Zionist Organization of America. And we got a lot of the good people, and I see more and more people that I know coming into this very special ceremony, which is by the Lone Soldier Center, in memory of Michael Levine, and a night to remember those who have fallen. So let's start with you, Akiva. Akiva, first thing, how come you look so great? Tell me about that.
Well, it's a wonderful thing when you are able to work and do things that you enjoy doing, which are not only fun things, but a benefit for other people and for Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. And it's a great opportunity to be part of that. Can't be anything but happy.
So you've brought thousands of people to the land of Israel and Aliyah and to Jerusalem. You basically, like Rav Cook, you first made Aliyah to the land of Israel and then to Jerusalem. You had like two Aliyot, myself as well. You've done that in your life. Now you're involved in a lot of organizations. You're volunteering. You've got 12 grandkids, Kanahara, and you're exercising and looking great. But tell me a little bit about what we're doing here today from your experiences, Israel experiences. What is Yom HaZikaron about and what are you doing here?
Well, there are two important things. First of all, as you said, it's social engineering. That's a brilliant stroke in Israel's side, but it's really basics of motherhood and apple pie. We're saying thank you. We wouldn't have what we have today were it not for the sacrifice of our children, our parents, our friends, who understood the importance of coming on this in this generation, on this stage, where we are, despite ourselves, being given by God the greatest miracles and the greatest opportunity in Jewish history to be able to come back and combine our people in our land doing what we're supposed to be doing by helping first and foremost the Jewish people in coming back home, and then through that creating a better world. And this is really what's significant about Yom HaZikaron, first and foremost saying thank you to those who have given us this and our opportunity so that tomorrow we can celebrate Israel Independence Day after 2,000 years.
Akiva, I'd like to ask everybody in your long sojourn here in the land and your many experiences, there's probably one name that kind of comes up during Yom HaZikaron, at least one person that like wells up and you're like, oh, him or her, I remember them. They either fought and died in battle or in a terrorism. Who's that person for you today?
Well, today I'm here because of Michael Levin. Michael was a wonderful, energetic, ideological young man who came here to Israel in order to serve the Jewish people. It hurt him that he was in America watching his peers here in Israel being able to defend the Jewish people in the Jewish homeland, and he couldn't sit in America watching that. And Michael came here in order to be able to do that service. It's even a longer story than that, because he had been home on vacation when war broke out here in Israel. And he broke that vacation and ran from his parents, who he loves and wanted to be with so dearly, and was waiting for that vacation in order to come back, because he couldn't bear the fact that his friends were out defending his people and he wasn't there to be part of that. and I honor that memory of this hero.
Did you know him?
Yes. I wasn't as involved with Tziki in helping him out in the army, though I was involved in the very beginning, but I was then in Shlichut in New York. That day after, I called Tziki to get some information about some of our Olim who were here, and he told me the terrible, terrible news that he was on his way up to a funeral for Michael.
So we all have people that we remember, and Akiva, you've been involved so much in bringing people to Land of Israel. Jeff Dalby, director of the Israel Office of the Zionist Organization of America, you help Israel stay strong by helping policies around the world be shaped in favor of Israel and also stand strong for Jewish communities like the community I work with in Hebron or the Mount of Olives where I live. You're involved in all of those things. What is Yom HaZikaron for a person like you who's really put all their life into strengthening Israel so that Jews wouldn't die, but Memorial Day still happens, that sacrifice still happens. What's Memorial Day for you?
Memorial Day for me is, first of all, very much like what Akiva just described. By the way, Akiva is my role model. I always say when I grow up, I want to be Akiva Werber. He was Mr. B'nai Akiva when I was just a lowly chanich, a lowly madrich and merakeh snif in B'nai Akiva, so he is very much in New York. In fact, he was in my Shevet. We don't want to talk about how many years ago that was, but in my Shevet, Shevet Nachshon, he was Mr. B'nai Akiva. He was also my Shliach Aliyah, so we have a lot in common. What is it for me? For me, I think it will be embodied in what I do tomorrow and what I've been doing the last few years. And that is going to your mountain. That is going to our mountain, Har HaZeitim. Why? Because there are 228 lone soldiers, Chayalim Bodedim, that are buried there. When? From? They were from 1947, 1948 battle for Yerushalayim. They were Nitzulei HaShoah. They were survivors of the Shoah. Many of them, most of them, perhaps even all of them, I'm not sure, did not have any family to speak of. So when I found out about this phenomenon back in 2012, I teamed with a group of volunteers, Orthodox, not Orthodox, Hebrew University students called Tzi'irim Leman Yerushalayim, young people for the benefit of Jerusalem, volunteers, who then worked with the gymnasium, a secular high school in Rehavia here in Jerusalem, to study about some of those soldiers, bring them up, and have a Yom HaZikaron ceremony there, speaking about these soldiers, because they have no family that visit them. That's what Yom HaZikaron means for me. Taking lone soldiers and having them work, having them defend our nation. It goes from the individual to the group and encompasses everybody and every subgroup in between. So Yom HaZikaron for me means the unity of the people and the land and the Torah of Eretz Yisrael.
All right, so Akiva Werber and Jeff Dalby, thank you so much, gentlemen. It's great that I had a feeling when you walked over, I had the feeling that you had some kind of connection. That was a great story about your connection. It's also the story of generations of the activists who have worked so long and so hard to...
It's even more than that. Now that we made Aliyah and we made the start and we're here in Israel, now we can start the mission here in Israel in bringing us all together and building a better society. This is only the start, making Aliyah.
Akiva Werber, Jeff Dalby, thank you so much, gentlemen, and may the memory of the fallen be blessed and happy Independence Day.
Chag Sameach.
And thank you so much, Yishai, for all you do.
All right, folks, we are still here at Ammunition Hill, and Memorial Day is about to come down. Sun's coming down. It's actually kind of cold here in Jerusalem. But you may not feel that if you're watching this broadcast. And this broadcast is, I'm taping it certainly, but it's going to go out there live because there's a company here called Be There Israel. And Be There Israel, they're actually there at a lot of hot events, sending it out to the world. We're using the power of technology to connect people to Israel, to connect people to live events. And Shani here, Shani Cooper, right? That's right, is I think the director of Be There Israel. Is that correct? One of the directors. There's a lot of good directors here. And you guys, I see you everywhere I want to be and everywhere that I want other people to be. You're there bringing people virtually, digitally, to Israel. You just came back from Poland from 8 days of broadcasting March of the Living. And now you're broadcasting Memorial Day and you're doing this as a volunteer. Your company's volunteering the service for this one because of the importance of it. Tell me a little bit about the last 8 days and then tonight.
Well, the last 8 days were incredible. Overwhelming in emotion and excitement and the ability that we could bring so many people to Auschwitz-Birkenau for Yom HaShoah. When March of the Living brings 10, 15,000 young people and other people there to see what happened and to know that we're still here and alive, and we were able to broadcast that to over 40,000 viewers, it really brings the world closer together and closer to understanding that we will not live that way again.
That's amazing. And you went from Poland, and I'm just wondering about the technical aspects of having to deal with a different internet and all that kind of stuff and connecting with the government or whatever it is to make sure that you're able to broadcast. And now you're coming here, and kind of a little bit the opposite of the Holocaust in some way is Memorial Day.
Memorial Day, as an ex-soldier for the U.S. military, it means a lot to me, Memorial Day. As a Jew and Israeli living here, Yom HaZikaron means so much more. It's more than just Memorial Day. It's remembrance and remembering our entire history and everyone who has fought, lived, and died to give us the freedom that we enjoy today. To be standing here in Israel, my grandparents would have cried and dreamed for this moment. And I live here. I live the moment. And it can't get better than that.
Not only are you living the moment, but you're helping tens of thousands of people live it through Be There Israel, an incredible organization which is using technology, bringing Israel to the world. Daniel here is your what? Daniel, what's your position?
We're partners in the company.
You're awesome. Also, you're a great movie maker. I've seen you do a lot of different videos, a lot of different things. Video is such a powerful medium today. Also, live video really makes people feel like they're there. Tell me about the last 8 days and today.
Well, thank God. We're privileged to work with some really great organizations. I mean, we like the technical aspects of what we do, and we're really privileged to be able to do it for things that matter, like helping March of the Living connect so many people to Israel and to their Judaism, and being able to volunteer tonight for the Michael Levine Lone Soldier Center and help them support all the programs that they're doing to help the lone soldiers that are here and to bring more lone soldiers. There's a lot of people who make Aliyah to Israel to serve in the IDF because they feel that Israel is an important part of Judaism and they want to help defend that.
You've also done a lot of Aliyah, the Nefesh B'Nefesh landings. What other kinds of events do you do?
We do anything from helping families who are here connect when they're making an event like a wedding and can't necessarily bring everyone, to corporate events for some Israeli companies that have different branches all around the world. And they want to be based in Israel because they feel passionate about doing business here, but it's a global economy and they need to be able to be based here and still be connected to everywhere else.
So I've been to like weddings and stuff like that where you have the regular camera guy who's making the video of the wedding, and then you have these Be There Israel guys running around making it like a show, getting that broadcast out to people in different places. So you guys are like life cycle of the Jewish world, of Israel, to the world. It's a great company and it's very important. I want to thank you so much for also volunteering tonight. We continue to be soldiers. We continue to be soldiers, and today's soldierness is also about consciousness. There's a lot of people that want to doubt our rights and doubt our story. And by sharing this, you're really strengthening that consciousness.
I definitely agree with that. To be conscious of what Israel is today and to be a Jew living in a world where Israel exists, that's a consciousness that needs to be highlighted and brought to the world.
There you go. All right, guys, I want to thank you so much. And the website is?
Our website is JerusalemMediaGroup.com. And you can see any of our live streams at livestream.com/BTI, which is for Be There Israel.
Be There Israel. That simple. All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much. And may the memory of those who have fallen be blessed. And may we be strengthened through them.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
All right, folks, we're here at Givata Tachmoshet. The Givata Tachmoshet tune is in the background right now. I've already explained about the importance and the symbolism of Givata Tachmoshet. I'm here with Ari Kalker, who's the director of special programs at the Lone Soldier Center. Ari, when I was a lone soldier 20 years ago, there was no Lone Soldier Center. Lone Soldier meant what it doesn't mean today. It meant you were alone. Okay, today, organizations like yours embrace the soldiers and give them a sense that they're not totally alone, that there's a general mission about more and more Jews from throughout the world coming here to serve Israel, to help Israel, to defend Israel, and they're going to be embraced by somebody. That's an amazing thing. Tell me a little bit about the organization, and tell me especially about tonight, why you made a special Memorial Day event. This is, you know, this is for the lone soldiers that aren't here with us anymore, yet you're doing this event today. Tell me about that, Ari Kalker.
So 13 years ago, when I served as a lone soldier, there also was no Lone Soldier Center. It wasn't until 2008, 2009, when we found the Lone Soldier Center and we started having a place for lone soldiers to not be so alone anymore. Over the years, there have unfortunately been more lone soldiers added to the list of the fallen, and it became more personal for us and our volunteers and our staff that we would go to other ceremonies every year and we'd remember our brothers like every other soldier that fell in battle. But for us, it was a little bit more personal. For us, we felt that as we came and we came out of a total sense of volunteerism and a pureness, so to say, with no one forcing anything on us. We wanted to remember our brothers that fell a little bit differently. This year begins the cycle of the 10-year anniversary of the Second Lebanon War, which is when Michael Levine, who the Lone Soldier Center is named after, fell in battle. And we felt it appropriate that the first Yom HaZikaron Tekes that we do would be at a significant historic point. And 10 years, 10 is a good round number to start. It's a good place to start from and move forward. Tonight, we're going to talk about three specific soldiers who fell in battle. Avi Grogan, who was originally from Phoenix, who fell as a medic treating wounded soldiers in one of the battles in the First Lebanon War.
I want to pause you for a second and just say, when you say fell, that means, you know, that's a very, you know, it's a word that is meant to connote something. The bottom line is, you understand, when Ari says fell, it means died. It means lost his life, gave up his life, fell in battle. And that's for you, but Ari, I just want to make sure people understand what it means, because we lose those people forever. They gave it up for the defense of Israel. You don't like that phrase. Go ahead.
Fell in battle has a different meaning to me. Dying is death. It's the end of something. Regular people die. Normal people die. Plants die. That's the end. That's the end of their physical ability to do anything in the world. Falling in battle comes from the idea of falling down. You get back up. When someone falls in battle, their memory and their energy is carried on by the men they fought with and by the people they inspired by their actions. The people who fall in battle live on long, long after they fall. So defining falling in battle as dying, it's a disservice to the word.
Okay, I really appreciate that point. Now, you're talking about the first person that we commemorate tonight?
So tonight we're going to commemorate three people, like I was saying. The first one is going to be Avi Grogan, who's Michael Rabibo, who also was a lone soldier in the First Lebanon War. They were friends. They grew up together in Phoenix. Michael Rabibo fought in the Tank Corps. And his friend Avi Grogan, who was a medic in the Golani Division, fell in battle in the First Lebanon War, tending to injured soldiers himself, and with his dying breaths was giving instructions to his fellow soldiers how to treat the wounded that he was taking care of. The second soldier we're going to talk about is Yigal Arad, who was a Holocaust survivor who fought in the War of Attrition. He fought and earned a Medal for Valor here at Ammunition Hill in the Six-Day War, and he fell in battle. He was in the Yom Kippur War, in the battle for the city of Suez. He was also a medic. He was killed in battle tending to the wounded from his APC, which was hit by rocket fire. The third soldier we're going to talk about, who's the namesake of our organization, is Michael Levine, whose story and his devotion to Israel has inspired not just his friends to create an organization, but has inspired the next generation of Jewish youth around the world to realize that caring about Israel means more than just putting an Israeli flag on your backpack and writing a letter. That caring about Israel is an action, is something you do. And his mother will be speaking about him. And that's
It's powerful stuff. That's what it is. And we're here at Ammunition Hill, which is such a symbolic place. Everybody knows Ammunition Hill here in Israel. It means sacrifice. It means Israel. It means Jerusalem. And it's an incredible kind of confluence that you're bringing lone soldiers, which is something that like maybe Israelis weren't very conscious of, and you're bringing that incredible story about Jews coming from throughout places around the world to Israel to defend Israel, to the heart of Israeli identity here at Givat HaTachmoshet. Tell me a little bit about the event tonight here.
So the event tonight here started as an idea. We started bringing groups of soldiers before they draft here to Givat HaTachmoshet to learn about the concepts of bravery and courage in battle. And I was sitting here, the director of the mountain, whose father fell fighting here, and he was saying how I asked him what was going on here in Yom HaZikaron, because I was looking for a tekes to go to. And he said that this year, that the last couple of years, there has not been a tekes at Ammunition Hill on Yom HaZikaron. And immediately a light went off in my head, and I said, that's it. This is the perfect place to have a ceremony for lone soldiers. The soldiers that all fought here were all reservists. A large number of them had originated from outside of Israel. The statistics on which ones are lone soldiers and not, hopefully by next year we'll actually have. And it just felt right. This is the place. The mountain that we're on signifies courage and bravery in battle. It signifies going way above and beyond what's expected and courageous and going taking bravery and courage to a whole new level. The soldiers entered this mountain with no intelligence, no aerial footage, nothing. They entered this mountain not knowing what they were getting themselves into. And they fought here bravely for 4 hours, a battle that people dreamed impossible to win. And the victory here was what really turned the battle for Jerusalem around in the Six-Day War and propelled everything forward. I thought, what more of a fitting place to have a ceremony to mark the sacrifice of lone soldiers over generations than at Ammunition Hill.
Ari Kalker, Lone Soldier Center, Director of Special Projects, thank you so much for this evening, and thank you for keeping the memory of alive of those who have fallen, and you're helping get up. Thank you, Ari.
Thank you, Yishai.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show. I want to thank you so much for being with me. Right now, I'm on the Mount of Olives overlooking the Temple Mount. My blue and white flag is flapping in the wind. My baby's next to me. The Jewish people are coming home to the land of Israel, and it's really all happening, but it doesn't happen without the incredible sacrifice of generations of men and women who lay down their lives for the rebirth of the Jewish people in the land of Israel in the service of God, really in the service of God. And I want to hear from you, so write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. I want you to come visit me here in the land of Israel. I want you to come visit Hebron. Check out our website, hebron.com. And check out our Facebook page. It's Hebron Official. Facebook, Hebron Official. You can connect to me, Yishai Fleischer. It's at Yishai Fleischer on Twitter and at Gmail. And you can find me also on LinkedIn and Facebook. We're all over the place to connect you. And the most important thing is that you stay connected to the story of the Jewish people, the land of Israel, and the dream of God, which is to make a better world. That's exactly what's happening through this great return. And I want you to be part of it. Happy Yom HaTzmaut. Happy 68th Israel. God bless you. Keep up the strength. Keep bringing light into this world. Israel, that's true about Israel, and it's true about you as well. Stay tuned. More great stuff is on the way. And shalom.